talking over her shoulder. Years ago, they made a deal with Phoenix to shift all their tribal water rights over to the city. The Pima had water rights to Central Arizona Project water because of old reparations. Phoenix needed that water when the rivers around here started drying up, so it was a win-win. Phoenix got the water it wanted to keep growing, and the Pima got a massive cash settlement that they used to buy land up north. Angel smirked. Where it actually rains. Lucy used the water urn to wash her hands on the knife. Came back wiping her hands on her jeans. Sure. The Colorado River didn't look like a good bet long term. Having paper rights to a dying river is useless. So the Pima sold their water and bailed. And? Lucy sat down on the chair beside him. The tribe thought they just owned a piece of the Central Arizona Project's supply, okay? A cut of Arizona's cut of the Colorado River. Pretty junior rights when you look at the overall river. Lots of people have older, more senior rights, so you're always in danger of getting cut off by someone else. That's why they bailed. But Jamie was always in old archives. Not just water filings, other archives too. Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Reclamation, Army Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Indian Affairs. There are so many overlapping jurisdictions and conflicting judicial rulings and conflicting agreements about water that it's like digging through bureaucratic spaghetti. You have to file Freedom of Information Act requests up the ass to get anything at all. And lots of times, those FOIAs get lost or forgotten. Or they're so redacted that they're useless. It takes forever to drag information out of an agency, so if you don't have the kind of personality that Jamie had, you don't get far. But your friend Jamie had that kind of personality, Angel said. She made a face. Jamie was the kind of anal-retentive egotist who likes to prove he knows more than everyone else, which doesn't get you friends and doesn't get you promoted. It gets you dumped out on old Indian reservations, digging through paper files and storage lockers, with black widows and rattlesnakes and scorpions, while your bosses laugh it up and go to banquets inside the Tai Young. It also puts your hands on a lot of very old documentation. All these intersecting agreements that the Pima had with the feds and the Bureau of Indian Affairs from generations ago. We're talking from when the reservations first were getting set up. The Pima have rights that go way back, and Jamie was up to his neck in all these file boxes. And one of those was water rights. Not just any water, water from the Colorado River. What date? Late 1800s. Angel whistled. That's old. That's senior. Some of the most senior rights on record. How'd people miss it? Jamie thought. The Bureau of Indian Affairs deliberately buried it. It was an inconvenient agreement that the Bureau regretted. They didn't give a damn about some tribe in the middle of nowhere, and for a while it probably wasn't even relevant, because it wasn't like Arizona could touch the Colorado back then. Despite himself, Angel found himself becoming intrigued. But now there's the Central Arizona Project. A big old straw to carry water straight across the desert. Lucy was nodding. Which means Phoenix and Arizona trump California. Cali's got senior rights on 4 million acre feet of water, but if that gets taken away from them, they've got the Imperial Valley and 50 million people depending on that water. They need these rights to die quick and quiet. And not just California. If Phoenix shows up in court waiving these senior Pima water rights, everything changes. For everyone. Phoenix could have the Bureau of Reclamation drain Lake Mead, send all the water down to Lake Havasu for Phoenix's personal use. They could make Los Angeles and San Diego stop pumping. Or they could sell the water off to the highest bidder. They could build a coalition against California, keep all the water in the upper basin states. And then California would blow up the CAP just like they took out that dam in Colorado. Yeah. Except the feds have drones all over the CAP now. They'd see it this time. Even California would think twice about starting an actual civil war. Lobbying for the State Sovereignty Act so you can patrol state borders with National Guard troops is one thing. Even blowing up a dam for water that's already yours is legal, in a way. But starting an open shooting war? America might be broken, but it still exists.
People used to say that about Mexico, too. Then one day, people woke up in the cartel states.
Just because the army's stretched thin doesn't mean Washington, D.C. is going to tolerate an open war over water.
Have you actually seen these rights? You read what they say?
Jamie wouldn't show me anything. He was paranoid. Secretive. He kept saying after the deal was done, he'd lay all the details out. She sighed. He was worried that I'd betray him, I think. He denied it, but by the end he barely trusted anyone.
Seems reasonable, considering how people act when they get their hands on them. Your friend Jamie gets them and decides to make a score off them. Julio hears about it and does the same. Even Rattan, as soon as he gets hold of them, starts trying to do a side deal. As soon as people get a whiff of these rights, they try to make a score.
It's like these rights are cursed.
Cursed or not, the real question is, where are they now?
Both their gazes went to the laptop that Julio had stolen from Michael Rattan. Angel reached for it, but Lucy beat him to it.
No, she said as she scooped it up. This is my story. I'm in it. I want to know.
Lot of people end up dead around these rites.
Lucy's hand settled to the pistol that she'd laid on the counter.
Is that a threat?
Would you let that go? I'm just saying this is a dangerous game.
I'm not afraid. She looked down at Julio and the dead Cholobi. I'm already in it anyway. Angel was disturbed to find that some part of him was actually pleased that she was willing to fight to get closer to the story rather than run away.
Women make men into fools.
His father saying that, back during the good years before everything fell apart for Angel.
Fine, Angel said, but we've got to hold up, and I don't want to use any of my safe houses. If Julio was willing to kill one of his own for this, there's no telling who or what else he sold out while he was working down here.
You think he was playing double agent? Angel stared down at the body of the man he'd gunned down.
I think he was greedy. And that's enough for me. We need someplace off the map. Someplace neither of us would normally use.
I have friends, Lucy said. They'll help us.
Chapter 28
Roach has come free, Charlene said. The floor was springy beneath Lucy's feet, barely shored up enough to hold her without crashing through to the squat below. They had climbed a ladder made of scavenged 2x4s to reach it, and Lucy could hear footsteps echoing down from the family in the squat above. More squats, pressed on either side. Stack after stack after stack, all of them lapping around the edges of the Red Cross China Friendship water pump. The squat was laid out in two rooms, one for living, with a knife-scored wooden table and a tiny LED lantern strung overhead, casting harsh pale light.
You got a hot plate,
Charlene said doubtfully. In the other room, a pair of sagging mattresses covered the floor entirely. Conversation and entertainment programming filtered through the walls, a mashup of drama clips and music videos echoing from the tinny speakers of hacked Chinese language tablets, mixed with the languages and accents of refugees, people up from the Gulf, where they'd been driven off by hurricanes, people from the cartel states, fleeing drought and narco-violence, huddled humanity hoping for something better. Crushed up against the hard walls of the State Sovereignty Act.
I gave you sheets, Charlene said.
It's good, Lucy said.
More than good, it's wonderful.
A baby was crying next door. Its squalling spiking through the walls.
You can have any of the clothes the renters left,
Charlene said, pointing to a pile of black plastic trash bags and abandoned suitcases.
There's good stuff in them, high-end designer and shit.
She grinned, showing her missing teeth.
You can dress classy, Prada and Dolce and Gabbana, Michael Kors, Yan Yan, all that kind of stuff. I use it for rags mostly, but if you want anything...
How did you get so much?
People ditch it. K Can't carry it all when they go across to Cali or try to go north. Are you sure you don't want to just crash with me? Charlene asked. I got a real house. You don't have to be in this shithole.
Are you sure?
The smell of overcooked eggs wafted up from the squat below. Lucy could feel humanity pressing in on her, claustrophobic. But the water knife had been adamant about wanting someplace untraceable.
This is perfect, she said.
You don't need to worry. I just need someplace to lie low. She looked at Charlene significantly. Someplace far away from people I know.
Sure, I get that. But you got to know. This ain't a great time to be stuck in with Texans. They've been all riled ever since all those coyote killer bodies started getting dug out of the desert.
She shrugged.
They're taking it all personal.
Personal how?
They're all hair trigger. I'm just saying that if stuff starts to go wrong, get out.
Anything I should look for?
You just never know what sets shit off.
Argument in the line for the pump. Sometimes gangs come in and try to teach the Texans lessons. Then you got a riot. Just don't make me clean your blood out of the wood. Keep your head up.
I'll be fine.
And yet, still, Charlene hesitated.
What's bothering you? Charlene looked at her sidelong, then finally said the thing that Lucy realized she'd been working up to all along.
I don't know what story you wrote that pissed people off.
She held up her hands.
And I don't want to know, but you got to remember that this is the vet's territory. Around here, people are all kicking up to that psycho, and he's got eyes on everything. Man gives kids bottles of water and candy if they keep their eyes out. You can never tell who's on his payroll.
Lucy thought of the children in the squat below, solemnly watching as she climbed up the ladder with Charlene.
It's not a narco thing, she said.
If that's what you're wondering, I'm not doing anything with narcos. Charlene didn't hide her relief.
Oh, good. He shouldn't care then.
She nodded, satisfied, and handed Lucy the keys to the flop's padlock.
You can use this place as long as you want.
She dug in her jeans and pulled out another set of keys.
And I got you some wheels, too.
You said you needed some, right? Lucy started to thank her, but Charlene waved her off.
It's just a cheap-ass metro car.
But it'll get you around. It's hybrid, but the battery doesn't charge, so don't run out of gas, and don't trust the range on it. It's all screwed up. If you walk out to Guadalupe, there's an old Target there. Vets got people who watch cars in the lot, and I gotta deal with them. They'll keep it from getting scraped till you need it.
Charlene, you're amazing.
Charlene laughed.
Well, it's got Texas plates still, so don't thank me too much. I swear I got a bullseye on my back when I'm driving that thing. Wouldn't believe the nasty looks you get from people.
She shook her head.
Never really thought about how shitty it is to be a Texan until I drove that damn car.
How'd you get it?
Same as everything. Renters. Bought it off them before they went north.
She shrugged.
It's a piece of shit, but I figured I could scrap it. Plus, I felt bad for them. They had a couple kids with them, so you knew they were going to pay through the nose to get across the border. Didn't have the heart to bargain hard with them. It is a genuine piece of shit, though.
It'll be great.
We'll see if you're still saying that when someone takes a pot shot at you.
And then she was climbing down the ladder and heading out, back again to stripping subdivisions and hauling the scrap closer to the Red Cross pumps, where she would build even more squats, packing housing into the sprawl that Phoenix had left wide and open. Lucy took another quick tour of the squat. She had to give Charlene credit for her building skills. The makeshift apartment even had a tiny window. She peered out through the smudged and dusty glass. A good location. Close to the pump, and good views out back through the door. Down into the alley that served the stacks. As much as any place in this crowded slum, it was possible to see who was coming. A few minutes after Charlene left, Lucy spied the water knife threading his way through the crowds around the pump. She lost him, then caught sight of him again, leaning against a wall, chewing a toothpick, watching. He remained so still that Lucy found her eyes continually drawn to other activity.
to the food vendors, to the people standing in the water line, to the people selling power bars and black market humanitarian rations from the blankets spread around the edges of the plaza. The man simply blended. He was sitting beside another pair of men, and as Lucy watched, he leaned over and got a light from one of them for a cigarette. He offered the cigarette to them in return, sharing it. And in that moment, he disappeared entirely. He wasn't a lone individual anymore, but now a group. Three friends, sitting against the wall, idly chatting. One becoming three, becoming invisible. He could have been anything. Maybe Mexican, maybe Texan, maybe a day worker. Maybe someone who worked muscle for the vet. Maybe just a tired family man, trying to get his family north, desperate to get out of his squat and away from screaming babies. Just another dusty person who'd seen hardship and, because of that, was invisible. The sun was starting to set, an angry red ball against the smoky, dusty skyline. People were coming back from their work, lining up to buy water by the gallon. Some of them filling, then going back in the line to avoid the increasing rates that came from high-volume pumping. For the last 10 years, she documented people like this. And now, she was one of them. Part of the story, just as she'd always known she would be. Anna would have said she was an idiot. Even Timo, who spent plenty of time around death, at least knew how to circle the edge of the vortex without getting sucked in. Timo had the survival instinct. When things got too crazy, he stepped way the fuck back. And here she was, diving in deeper. What was wrong with her? How could she explain to Anna that she'd gone to the Taiyang, trying to hunt down Jamie's last contacts, following leads to a death that could only put her in danger? You put yourself in that chair. She remembered telling her torturer everything she knew, dredging up details, desperate to make the hurting stop. She felt soiled now, thinking about how desperate she'd been to please him, to have him compliment her on her recollections. "You've got a good memory," he'd said at one point. And then he'd lit her up again. "It ain't personal." And that was the true horror. It hadn't been personal. It hadn't been about her at all. She was just meat with a mouth. One that might or might not have information he wanted. And still, she pursued this, even after she knew how dangerous it had become. Anna would never understand. There was a knock at the door. Lucy let Julio's killer inside. He was moving stiffly, but he didn't complain about pain. Just examined the squat, wandering in and out of each room. "Tell me about the lady who's giving you this place," he said. "Charlene is fine. I've known her for a long time. I trust her."
"I used to trust Julio."
He sidled up to the window and peered down at the pump below. He looked paranoid. He glanced back at her sardonically.
"I am paranoid. Julio knew a hell of a lot about me. He knew the ID codes on my car. He knew one of the names I was using while I'm down here."
"What is your name, anyway?"
He shrugged. "Whatever you want."
"Seriously?" He just went back to searching the squat. "I don't think you're going to find any bugs here."
"Not looking for bugs.
Tell me about your friend again. Who is she?" "I did a story about her a long time ago," Lucy said. "She gets houses for scrap. She helped me get my solar panels. She's safe. Really."
"You mean she helped you steal them?"
He walked the perimeter walls, pausing, pressing his ear to the scavenged wood.
"And here I thought you were one of the good guys."
He pulled his pistol and tapped a chipboard wall with the butt, listening to the hollow sound. He went into the bedroom, stepping over the mattress to tap the walls there as well. "Charlene calls it repurposing," Lucy called after him.
"Oh yeah?"
She could still remember lowering the panels off a roof in the middle of the night, her heart pounding, expecting at any moment to be nailed by the junk patrol and trying to think how she'd explain herself.
Charlene wouldn't let me profile her unless I came along and helped her on a job. I didn't know she was going to give me the solar panels until after we'd already taken them.
Get some extra cash out of the story, then.
I try to make my J-school professors proud.
He came out of the bedroom and peered again out the window's spider-cracked glass, eyeing the ad hoc electricity line that ran from the power pole through the window, to terminate in a makeshift squid of plugs that then spread in all directions through holes drilled in the floor and ceiling and walls, dispersing power to the rest of the hacked-together apartments.
"So now she's a landlord?"
he asked. "She started building these a couple years back. People need to live close to the pumps. A lot of them can't afford to keep cars anymore, so they need places where they can catch a bus and where they can get water without having to walk so far."
"Who's she paying off?"
"There's a gangster called the Vet. This is his territory. Why?"
He shrugged. "Julio had that cholo be with him. Don't know what he's about. Maybe he was just muscle. Maybe Julio had friends. Maybe those friends come looking for payback."
"They wouldn't know about us anyway."
"Unless Julio was talking to people."
He kept circling the squat. It raised Lucy's hackles. He was like some kind of strange dog, sniffing about. He stood stock still in the middle of the room, listening.
"I don't know. Place makes me nervous."
"You really are paranoid. This is about as far off the grid as you can fall."
"I just keep thinking about Julio and I don't like it. I got rid of my cars and destroyed my cell."
"That Tesla?"
"Probably joyriding around the city by now."
"You're serious? You just threw that car away? Charlene would have bought it off you."
He shook his head.
"Nah, I don't want that thing connected to me."
"You really are paranoid."
"No, I'm alive."
He went to the door and looked out at the gathering darkness.
"It'll do," he said finally,
and closed the door with a purposeful air. He hooked the padlock through its interior loops, securing the place. If he'd been Sunny, looking like that, he would have just successfully pissed on every car tire and dusty fire hydrant within 100 yards. With a start, she realized that Sunny was back at home.
"My dog."
He gave her a warning look.
"Have someone else check on it. Not someone who knows where we are, though."
"What do you think is going to happen?"
"I don't know."
He shook his head, frustrated.
"I wish I knew more about what Julio was into down here. He was willing to kill his own guy for a payoff, and that makes me think he'd be willing to do other things for cash, too. Maybe sell out his network to the Calis. Maybe partner with some narcos."
He trailed off, studying the squat.
"It'll do," he said again, mostly to himself.
He eased into a chair and set the dead Callie's laptop on the table, started poking at it.
"Do you even know what you're doing?"
she asked.
"Just checking things out."
"Look."
Lucy paused.
"What am I doing with this guy?"
"I can't work with you if I don't at least know your name. Lie if you want, but give me a name, give me something." The water knife looked up at her, smiled slightly.
"Okay. You can call me Angel."
"Really?" She almost made fun of it, but something in his eyes made her hold back.
"It's his real name."
"Angel."
"Angel."
He said it in the Spanish way, the G making a soft H.
"Angel."
He caught her doubtful expression.
"My mother thought I was going to turn out better than I did."
"In Mexico?" Lucy prodded.
"Long time ago."
He stripped off his jacket, wincing and careful. The makeshift bandage she'd made for him was rusty with dried blood. He didn't seem to care. He turned his attention to the computer again.
"And you were in a gang?"
Lucy said. "Those are the tattoos." He didn't look up.
"Long time ago, not in Mexico."
"And now you're a water knife."
He shrugged as he continued to peck at the computer.
"Do you still see your mother?" she asked.
"She's dead," he said.
"Let me guess, a long time ago?"
He didn't answer.
So much for connections.
She went to the window, amusing herself by watching the traffic around the pump. People coming and going. Texans lining up with empty jugs. People lying out on the heat of the pavement, content to have a scrap of sidewalk close to the water. At last, Angel said,
I can't crack this. Do you know anyone down here who does security work?
Lucy glanced back, surprised. I would have thought you had plenty of those people.
Yesterday I'd say I could get anything I wanted, any time I wanted. Now I just got this feeling that the place is rotten with moles. If I reach out to anyone who was in Julio's old network, it feels like a good way to get the wrong kind of attention. So you got someone who can work this? Or do I got to find a way to get this computer up to Vegas just to get a look inside?
Lucy frowned. I've got a friend. He works the blood rags. He might have someone we can use.
That Timo boy?
Yeah.
He'll be low-key, right? I don't want to end up as page one.
Do you trust me or not? He smiled a little at that. Chapter 29 Maria watched Toomey coming home from work, rattling down the street as the hot sun sank red over the abandoned subdivision. She'd never been so glad to see anyone in all her life. She loved everything about Toomey in that moment. His bald head, gleaming in the sun. The man's pupusa cart all hammered together with its red and white umbrella strapped across the top. His apron stripped off and folded neatly, so that he was just a man in baggy jeans pushing his cart. Even the one bad rattling wheel sounded good to her. Toomey startled at the sight of her sitting on his front stoop, but he didn't act as if she didn't belong. He came up and settled beside her with a groan.
Hey, little queen.
His voice was soft, not pushing, already knowing that things had gone wrong for her. He offered her water from a bottle with a scratched Coca-Cola label. His own water, she knew. Filled at the pumps closer to town before he made the trek out to the middle of nowhere. Maria sipped carefully, trying not to be greedy, fighting need. She knew what he was seeing. Another sad-ass girl trying to make herself look like a woman. Maria wiped the mouth of the bottle and handed it back. As he took it, she was aware of how big his hands were. Those hands had built houses. These houses. He sipped from the bottle and offered it to her again.
Go ahead, I got enough.
She shook her head. Sarah's dead. She was surprised that her voice didn't break. She felt torn to pieces, but her eyes were bone dry. It was like her body knew there was still too much pain ahead to waste tears now. It knew she needed to save her tears for the pain still to come. Toomey didn't look surprised at Maria's news. When she didn't say anything else, he said,
Sarah was that girl you ran with, right?
Yeah. The one with the skinny ass. You told me once that she wasn't playing smart. Maria shrugged. Should have listened. Toomey was quiet for a long time.
I'm sorry.
Maria knew he was looking at her. And she knew that he could tell from her skimpy black dress and high heels that she'd been playing Sarah's game, too. She stared determinedly out at the dusty street, avoiding his gaze. She didn't want to see the judgments of the clothes or Sarah or how stupid she'd been. She didn't want to see someone judging Sarah. I'm sorry, she thought to her friend. Her girlfriend, her... I'm sorry. Maria hunched in on herself, feeling small and exposed in her party dress, sitting beside this big man with his tightly buttoned shirt. This man who somehow managed to keep everything about himself organized. He was like an island of calm in the chaos. Even now, with everything fallen apart, he was more peaceful than anything she'd been next to in years. You were right, she repeated, pressing the issue. I shouldn't have gone with her. All Toomey said was,
I'm sorry.
Again,
Why are you sorry?
Maria shot back. It's not like you put the bullet in her. She got her own dumbass shot.
Toomey recoiled as if slapped.
Maria didn't want to push him away, but she couldn't help it.
It was as if she wanted him to react, to punish her, to call her out, to slap her down, to react in any way at all instead of just sitting next to her.
She glared at him. She fucked her own self up, right? Peddling ass like that. She deserved it. Dumb piece of Texas tail, right? She deserved it for being so stupid.
No, Toomey said gently. It wasn't her fault.
And no, she didn't deserve it.
She sold ass, and now she's dead.
He looked away. He started to say something, then stopped. Started again. Paused. Finally, he just sighed and said,
It wasn't always like this.
Maria laughed bitterly.
You sound like my dad, saying things didn't used to be this way.
It's going to get back to normal.
Suddenly, she was mad, enraged at Toomey and her father and everyone who talked about how their lives had been one way or another, but never talked about how it was now.
It's always been like this, she said, and it's always going to be like this, always.
Suddenly, she found that she could look the old man straight in the eye and not care that she felt naked in Sarah's borrowed dress, and that her feet hurt from the high heels, and that she'd left her friend to die alone because she couldn't pull her under the bed fast enough, couldn't save her, and maybe she was glad that Sarah had been there to take the bullet, because if they hadn't found Sarah to kill, they would have kept searching for the girls who belonged to the scattered clothes, and then Maria would be dead, too.
It's like you can't see what's happening. You talk about how it was before, but I don't know what that is. Whatever you had, I don't got it.
I wasn't,
Toomey started, but Maria raised her voice and rolled right over him.
Everyone I know is dead. My mom, my dad, now Sarah. And...
She hiccuped a sob.
I'm so tired. And...
She could barely get the words out. The grief was there, finally. All of it, welling up and overflowing. She sobbed for her losses. Sarah, her family, her perfect house in Texas, bunk beds, school, worrying about whether she was going to be allowed to get training bras, wondering whether Jill Amos was her friend or not, anticipating eighth grade prom. Stupid small things. And all of it was gone. She was all that was left. Maria Villarosa. The last bit of anything that she could remember. One person sitting in the middle of a ruined city beside some old black guy who just looked at her sadly and who was the closest thing she had to a friend or family in the whole entire world. Toomey's arm encircled her. At his touch, Maria sobbed harder, unbearably relieved to have him hold her. Eventually, her crying slowed, then stopped. She leaned against his chest, feeling exhausted and empty.
I just wanted to earn some money, she whispered. I lost Sarah's money, so I owed her. I owe the vet a ton of money now.
Hush, Toomey said. None of it's on you.
And that started her crying again. Eventually, finally, her tears dried for real. Grief as a hard, charred stone. She could feel it there. It wasn't gone, but seemed buried instead, under her ribs. Aching, but finished. Maria let herself lean against Toomey. For a long time, they said nothing. The sun sank redly over the hollowed houses that he'd built with his big hands and his optimism. Maria was surprised that she felt safe, and wondered at the feeling, and why she had it, and if it could last, and then decided there was no point questioning. A dog-like form slipped across the empty street, a coyote disappearing down an alley, running easily, its legs a fast trot blur. Tan and gray, lithe and purposeful, speeding through the thickening dusk. Toomey shifted.
The den's over there.
He pointed farther down the street. Are there a lot of them?
Maria asked.
At least 4 or 5.
He was quiet for a while.
I was going to sell that place for $359,000. Now I'm trying to figure out if I can charge a bunch of wild animals some rent.
It wasn't a good joke, but Maria laughed anyway. She looked up at him. She started to ask, but found she couldn't say the words. She looked away, not wanting to see his eyes. I was wondering if you'd... She trailed off, too embarrassed to go on. Her father had always said that you stood on your own 2 feet and didn't beg. You didn't ask.
I was wondering if I could stay with you, she blurted.
She shut up, then plunged on.
I've got some cash I could give you. I can work. I can help. I can do anything.
She reached for him.
I'll do all the things that Sarah was telling me I should do.
Toomey pushed her away.
Don't. We've already been over that.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
Don't think I'm not flattered.
He was shaking his head.
If I was a younger man or maybe a little less principled, then sure, yes, in a flat second.
He laughed uncomfortably.
But no.
I'll go,
Maria said, feeling stupid. Toomey looked puzzled.
Why would you do that?
You don't want me, she said. I get it.
Hell, girl, of course I want you.
He reached over and pulled her into a hug.
Of course I want you, but not like that. I want you to have everything you deserve. I want you to have a future and a life. I want you to get out.
Maria laughed hollowly.
You sound like my dad. There's no way out. The vet's gonna come for me, and when he gets hold of me, he's gonna feed me to his hyenas.
Well, we'll see about that. I know some people might be able to help you get out of here, get across the border.
Maria dug in her purse.
I don't have the money for that.
She dug in the dead lady's bag, pushing aside Rattan's soaked Bible, and came up with a yuan the scarred man had given her.
This is all I got. It would have been more if I'd gotten paid, but if it helps...
For some reason, that made Toomey look even more saddened.
I should have taken you in as soon as your father died.
Why?
The idea that anyone at all had been looking out for her made her chest feel tight again.
I kept thinking I could help you.
He sighed.
Saw you on the street and kept thinking I would. But I was afraid. So I kept putting it off, didn't want to make promises I couldn't keep. I didn't want to fail you. Thought you'd had too many people make you promises and then fail you.
Maria was surprised to see that Toomey's eyes were wet. He gripped her hands, enfolding them and the cash they held tight.
We're going to get you out of here, he said fiercely. You're not going to die down here, and for damn sure, you're not going to live here. Not if I've got anything to say about it anyway.
He stood up and beckoned her.
Now come inside and let's get you set up. We'll figure out a plan. We'll take our time and we'll think things through. And it'll be a real one, not a fantasy. We'll find someone to get you across the river. Just leave it to me.
She stared at him, confused. It was as if she'd cast witchcraft on him. A spell to make him do crazy things. Nothing about him made sense. Why did he suddenly want to help?
Quit worrying about it. Be glad.
That was Sarah's voice. Practical. Sarah took what she could get and didn't ask why.
Look where that got her.
But still, Maria followed Toomey inside and let him fry up a pupusa on a hot plate in his kitchen, and then she watched as he made up a bed for her in one of the many empty bedrooms of the house.
Why?
She asked, finally.
Why are you so nice? It doesn't make sense. I'm not your woman. I'm not your people.
We're all each other's people. Just like we're all our brother's keepers. We forget it sometimes. When everything's going to pieces, people can forget. But in the end, we're all in it together. You are my people, Maria. No question in my mind.
Most people don't think that way.
Yeah, Toomey sighed. I used to know this Indian guy, skinny dude, came over from India. didn't have a wife or family anymore. Maybe they were back there in India, I can't remember. Anyway, the thing he said that stuck with me was that people are alone here in America. They're all alone. And they don't trust anyone except themselves. And they don't rely on anyone except themselves. He said that was why he thought India would survive all this apocalyptic shit, but America wouldn't. Because here, no one knew their neighbors.
He laughed at that.
I can still remember his head wagging back and forth. No one is knowing their neighbors.
Toomey shrugged.
He called this city the coldest hot place he'd ever lived. And when he looked at the slums, he couldn't figure out why people didn't work together and build together and support each other more. And then he said he thought it was maybe because in America everyone had left their homes in other countries. So maybe that was why we'd forgotten what it was to have neighbors.
Maria thought of her own home, her life from before, school friends she hadn't seen in years, people she'd traveled with, headed for the dream her father had held in his head, of a California that they were never going to get to. Remembered Tammy Bayless, waving at her as she and her family bought their way north because they had the cash, and how Maria didn't. How Tammy had given her all her clothes, since she couldn't take them with her any farther, while both their fathers stood by, looking impatient and embarrassed at the gap that was being ripped between their children.
"I don't have kids," Toomey said. "My wife or me. Never bothered to find out why we couldn't, it didn't matter."
He shrugged.
"But if we'd had them, they'd probably be like you. Your age, maybe a little older."
He waved toward the window.
"And this is the world we would have given them. We would have loved them to pieces, but we still would have given them hell."
He sighed.
"Second I saw you, I knew I should have taken you in. But I was afraid. Afraid."
He shrugged.
"I don't know, that I wouldn't have enough to share, or it wouldn't work out. Maybe that's why we never had kids ourselves. It was easier not to risk failing."
He went out and came back with some clothes. A man's t-shirt that was like a tent on Maria.
"It's not your size, but at least it's clean."
She draped it over her head and slipped out of Sarah's party dress. It came off like the skin of a snake. And when it hit the floor, she was glad it was gone. Toomey smiled at her in the shirt.
"We'll find some real clothes for you. My wife wasn't too much taller than you. Fatter, though. I'll dig open her boxes tonight."
"Toomey?"
"Yeah?"
"What changed? Why help me now?"
"Hell." He shook his head. "I don't know. You think it's easier to just wall yourself off, just look away. But you know, I'm thinking we're fooling ourselves. Might as well put a little kindness back in. Sow that seed and see what comes. If I had kids, I'd sure pray that someone would look out for them. Wouldn't just be so busy looking out for themselves that they'd let tragedy happen. Just let it happen and happen without doing something about it."
He went to the door.
"You need a nightlight? I got a little solar thing."
Maria gave him a look. "That's kid stuff."
"Oh."
And Toomey seemed sad again. But he didn't say anything, just nodded and went out. Maria lay down on the mattress. There was a breeze coming in through the open window, carrying with it the scent of cooking fires and ash from mountain forests far away. Little dots of fire, twinkling like stars.
"I'll see you in the morning," Toomey called.
"Hey, Toomey,"
Maria called.
The big man returned.
"Yeah, little queen?"
"Thanks."
"No, little queen," Toomey said. "Thank you."
Chapter 30 Lucy caught up with Timo at a club shooting. Blue and red strobes, cops all around, busy scene and Timo in the middle of it. Catching blood on pavement, sticky already, moisture disappearing into hot, dry air. Bodies lay sprawled in a motley assortment. Women in strappy dresses and boyfriends who look like narco money and Cali slummers jostled for views from behind the police lines,
interested and chatty as cops tried to get statements.
It's a bad one, Timo said. Chinese don't like it when one of theirs goes down in the crossfire.
He nodded at the mob of cops.
City's trying to look like they're on top of their shit. I don't think the boosters were looking to make Phoenix Rising into a campaign for their body count.
Lucy scanned the jumbled bodies and finally picked out the Chinese guy. Rich, for sure. Lying in a puddle of blood, Ray-Ban and U data glasses shattered on his face. A blonde woman lay close, a lot of bling on her, diamonds on her fingers, gold necklaces tangled around her neck. Lucy couldn't tell where she'd been hit. She looked perfect. Yet she lay still, her blood and her boyfriend's mingling in a coagulating pool. They were holding hands, Lucy realized. They died holding hands. What a mess.
Timo finished shooting pictures of the dead Chinese guy. Little too tidy for the blood rags, but Xinhua loves Lawless in America stories. With the China angle, I should be able to make some money.
Lucy counted the bodies. 8. No, 10. Christ, 11. An odd mishmash of party clothes and beat-up-looking refugees. What the hell was this, some kind of narco hit?
Texans, if you can believe it. Pendejos are all riled up on account of that coyote mass grave thing. All the talk in the dark zones about fighting back. Creating Texas militias, mutual protection posses, shit like that. This is the 4th gunfight I've been at tonight. Body Lottie's going to be way skewed for the day, probably the week too. Texans are all hell-bent to fight back.
Against what?
Hell if I know. Flynn says this shootout started because someone in line for the club had the wrong draw. Spilled over. Bunch of other Texans joined in. Solidarity thing. Next thing you know, boom. Bodies dropping.
A lot of bodies.
Yeah. Funniest thing is, the person who started it is still alive. Sucker's not even from Texas. Atlanta, Georgia, of all places.
Lucy stared at the bodies. A whole pile of misunderstanding. The city felt as if it were imploding.
You want something? Timo asked.
What?
She tore her gaze from the bodies.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering if you have anyone who could crack a hard drive for me?
You looking for scandal pictures?
She shook her head. It's private. I just need it cracked.
Private, huh? Well, I can get someone to take a look at it.
He waved for her to follow him into the bar, and she tagged along. The cops led her and Timo by, Timo joking easily with them. Him and the murder police, one chummy posse that rode from bloodbath to bloodbath, all of them enjoying one another's company as they gathered around the tangled bodies. It reminded her of Torres, back before he'd ended up as one of Timo's photo spreads.
You didn't recognize the Chinese guy, did you?
Timo asked. Lucy glanced back at the body.
No, why?
Dunno. Seems like we're getting more cops than I would have expected, even for a good PR show.
He nodded at a couple of plainclothes murder cops who were questioning witnesses.
Don't normally get a detective on the scene this fast, though it might be political, too.
And if it is, picks sell better. Xinhua might be willing to pay more than they say at first, if I know the angle.
I'll check.
Thanks.
He took the laptop from her hands. The bartender came over, but Timo waved him off. He gave Timo a dark look, but left. Timo thumbed through the photos he had on his camera already, nodding to himself. Overhead, a couple TVs were running the latest feeds. The dam up on the Colorado was completely gone. And the ones below it, too. Timo caught the direction of her gaze.
Christ, that's a mess, ain't it?
Lucy nodded, fascinated. So much had been happening in her own life that she'd forgotten that the world around her was still going down the drain. A good portion of a town called Delta seemed to have been completely wiped out. Water blasting and spreading after coming through a canyon. There were aerial views of the destruction.
Had to be California, Timo said as he fiddled with the computer.
This is government issue, he muttered. He glanced up, concerned.
This ain't a cops, is it?
No.
Well, it might as well be. It's missing its key.
That's what I wanted you for.
He grimaced.
I can't get in.
This is designed to feed through a crypto link. Probably some corporate card, a phone maybe. Might be a piece of jewelry, something like that. Passes info back and forth. Crypto goes in one side, comes out the other. If you've got the key with you, it works. If you don't, it don't.
Is there any way to get past the key?
Timo shrugged.
He was watching the TV again.
You ever get the feeling it's all falling apart?
She couldn't help laughing. But he wasn't deterred.
I'm serious.
He jerked his head up at the wreckage of the dams. The footage showed empty lakes with their bathtub rings around their sides. A few muddy pools in the canyon bottoms were all that was left of the azure reservoirs that had been there a day before. The TV cut to a helicopter view. Circling a massive yellow dump truck smashed and bent, spat out upon the riverbanks, 50 miles downstream from where the dam had broken. It had been crushed and tossed and floated by the violence of the water. And all that was left now was a rounded metal nugget.
Bet they do Glen Canyon next, Timo said.
No, California's already got control of Lake Powell, Lucy said. They'll pass the water down.
Still wouldn't want to own land below a dam these days.
On a beach either.
Tell it, sister.
Timo went back to fiddling with the computer.
Look, I got a friend might be able to fake a key. It'll take time, though. Can I take this for a bit?
Lucy hesitated.
Timo rolled his eyes.
What, you think I'm going to scoop you or something?
She tried to make herself not feel anxiety at the thought of the computer disappearing from her control.
It's valuable. Trust me, he said. The lady I'm taking it to, she does security for microbloggers. Helps people like us keep from getting ourselves killed by narcos. She's good, and she's on our side.
Lucy tried to force away her feeling of foreboding and made herself smile.
I'd appreciate it.
It's nothing, he said. And let me know about that China guy. If he's a big fish, I could probably charge Xinhua triple for good bloody photos.
He grabbed the laptop and his camera and headed for the door. Lucy watched the computer walk away. Chapter 31. As soon as Lucy left to meet with Timo, Angel decamped to get in touch with Catherine Case. In the early evening, the heat was coming off the city, dropping into the low hundreds. A night market had sprung up around the pump. Tiny solar lanterns dangled like fireflies over men and women as they wrapped burritos and pupusas and soft tacos in the newsprint of the blood rags. Angel had spent enough time in disaster barrios to know their rhythms, and he should have felt comfortable in this landscape of chipboard squats, quadruply chained mountain bikes, and cut to rags Gore-Tex fabric blocking dust from doors and windows. But even now, with rooms to base out of, and his trail behind him dead, he couldn't quite escape his prickling paranoia. The place felt charged to him, the dry air wired with as much malevolent electricity as a thunderstorm's. Angel leaned against one of the concrete defense barriers that surrounded the Red Cross pump, watching as people lined up for their evening rations. Dirty t-shirts, cut-off shorts, sway-backed exhaustion. Cash and cards going into the machine, the pump chiming as jugs filled. The people disappearing back into the rat warrens of the squats, carrying their treasure. Not far away, an old guy had spread a blanket and laid out disposable phones, clear sacks, and repurposed Chinese language tablets, along with the latest copies of Rio de Sangre, cigarettes, and hash gum. Angel bought a disposable phone. It took a little while, but eventually he was passed through to Case's own number.
"Where the hell have you been?" she demanded.
"It's been kind of busy down here."
What was it about the place that had his hair standing on end? No one he recognized in the crowds, no Callies jumping out from behind the taco vendors. So why was the place getting under his skin? Was it Sixth Sense?
or just the dregs of adrenaline still ticking through him from his shootout with Julio.
"Where are you now?" Case asked.
Across the open plaza, a black guy sporting a Dallas Cowboys jersey was being stalked. A crew of low-rent gangbangers were on him, clearly looking for a fight with the asshole who was willing to fly Texas colors. Angel eased himself back into an alley between stacked shelters, waiting for them to pounce. Instead, people coalesced around the Cowboys fan. Men and women lifting shirts to show pistols to the Cholobies.
"I'm in the middle of a damn tinderbox," Angel muttered as the Cholobies lifted their own shirts, showing their own weapons. He backed deeper into the alley.
"What?"
"Never mind."
He tried to keep one eye on the brewing mess and the rest of his attention on Case.
"We've got a problem."
"Why haven't you been answering my calls?"
"I dumped my phone."
"Why? We lost your car, too. I thought you were dead."
To Angel's surprise, the Cholobies were backing out of the fight, looking tough, but clearly seeing that they were outgunned, surrounded by more Texans than they'd anticipated. He wondered if the Cowboys fan had been deliberately baiting them.
"I ditched the car, too," he said.
"Why?"
"Because it's been a day full of surprises and I don't feel like catching anymore."
"Tell me about it," she replied. Her voice crackled with bad reception.
He wondered if the squats were interfering. She said something else, but static swallowed it. He pressed the phone tighter to his ear.
"Say that again?"
The fight had evaporated. But Angel didn't think the Cholobies would let it lie. He eased back into the open, scanning for more trouble. Case's voice crackled and returned.
"Why did you get rid of your car and sell?"
She sounded irritated. Angel thought he caught music in her background. Some kind of string quartet, making civilized music in Catherine Case's pristine world back inside Cyprus, while he waited for a shootout to erupt.
"Listen, I don't know how long..."
"Just a second."
He heard her talking to someone away from the phone and stifled his frustration. Where had those little gangbangers gone? He caught muffled voices on the phone, laughter, and then the background noise was gone and Case was back, seeming more focused.
"What do you know about the dams?"
"The dams?"
Angel tried to track.
"You mean the one up in Colorado?"
"Three of them now," she said. "Blue Mesa Dam and Crystal and Morrow Point Dam, they all came down. And now all that water's heading for Lake Powell and Glen Canyon."
"Powell's low, it won't matter, will it?"
"We assume. The crest will hit in another day. Glen Canyon is spilling water, just to be sure. Which is good for us, in a way. Mead will be fuller than it's been in years." There was more noise in the background.
"Give me a minute," Case said.
"Where the hell are you?"
Angel asked.
"Just a second."
More muffled conversation. Angel fought the urge to just hang up. He hated having to stand out in the open, but didn't want to lose the connection. The Cowboys guy was still there, like a matador waving a red cape.
"They're picking sides," he realized. "Everyone's picking sides."
Finally, Case came back on.
"I'm at the Cypress 5 launch party. It's fully subscribed and we haven't even broken ground. I'm here to fly the flag for SNWA, let everyone know that we're fully guaranteeing the project. 100-year drought insurance, that kind of thing."
"Sounds like a nice gig."
Her voice sharpened.
"It would be. Except I'm standing around smiling and telling investors we knew California was going to make this move on Blue Mesa Dam, and I had no idea."
"You think they're coming after us too? Going to hit Lake Mead?"
"My analysts say that it will never happen. It would be like dominoes. It could take out all of the dams below it. Plus, we don't think Northern California would let the state get dragged into a shooting war over Los Angeles and San Diego water. We think we're still safe."
"Is one of your analysts Braxton?"
"Let it go, Angel. I had him checked out. He's clean."
"Or smart?"
"You're the one who hasn't been answering my calls.
Braxton, I can keep an eye on.